Welcome to the Self-Publishing School Podcast. This is the podcast to listen to if you're an aspiring writer or an author who wants to be more successful. On this show, you'll learn how to write and launch a book successfully, all from the top authors and people just like you who are doing it at the highest level. I'm your host, Chandler Volt, the founder of Self-Publishing School, the author of the book called Published, and the CEO of selfpublishing.com. For free training on how to publish a book that sells 10,000 copies, go to selfpublishing.com/free training. Hey, Chandler Volt here, and welcome to a very special episode of the Self-Publishing School Podcast. So today, we've got a surprise guest. So I want to give you a sneak peek into Author Advantage Live. Last year, with our very own John C. Maxwell. So if you haven't heard of John C. Maxwell, you'll hear about it in the intro that I give here in a bit. But this is a sneak peek. So John was a guest at our virtual conference, Author Advantage Live. Last year, it brought down the house. This was far and away people's favorite session from the event as a whole. So I wanted to bring it here to you on the podcast as kind of a special episode. All right. So John talks about a lot of really interesting things about his book career. I don't know about you, but I grew up reading John C. Maxwell books, some of his books have been just very foundational to me becoming a better leader. And so a surprise announcement as part of this episode. So we just announced tickets for Author Advantage Live 2022. So for this year's Author Advantage Live. So if you haven't already, go grab a ticket. We've got amazing sessions like this. This event is all about helping you sell more books and unlock the author advantage, right? So go to authoradvantagelive.com. Grab a ticket today. They're crazy cheap. It's going to be an amazing event. Prices are going up real, real soon. So don't wait. Grab a ticket at authoradvantagelive.com. And I hope you enjoy this interview. We've got a very special guest this morning, guys. Our first guest of the day today is Mr. John C. Maxwell. How many of you have read some of John Maxwell's books? All right, we've got probably 50 to 60% of the audience. Gosh, maybe more. This is amazing. So I'm going to introduce him and then we'll bring him to the stage. So John C. Maxwell, he is the number one New York Times best-selling author. He's a speaker, coach, and a leader who sold more than 30 million copies of his books. More than 33 million copies to be exact. Unbelievable. He's written over 83 books. Just crazy. He's been called the number one leader in the business, and the world's most influential leadership expert. He's got multiple organizations. So he's got the John Maxwell Company. He's got the John Maxwell Team, where they certify coaches. He's got his company or nonprofit Equip. And then the John Maxwell Leadership Foundation. And through those organizations, they've trained millions of leaders from every nation. And I want to tell a quick story about this, how I first met John. So as some of you know, my brother plays in the Grammy-nominated rock and roll band called Need to Breathe. And he was playing Chick-fil-A leader cast years and years and years ago. I think I was either still in high school or I was in college. And it was one of the first conferences that I ever went to. And so he said, hey, I've got, I can get you to come to this conference. I think it'll be really cool. And so he invited me, my brother did. And then he brought me backstage and there were two, John, you might not remember this, but there were two people that I met. All right. And it was John Maxwell and it was Jack Welch. the kind of legendary, I had to track him down on the way out. But I mean, it was just such a cool moment for me. And it was one of those light bulb moments, which I hope this is a light bulb moment for some of you here at this conference in a similar way, where it was, I went to that conference, I saw him speak, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so helpful. I want to do more of this. I want to, it was just like a life-altering moment at that event, and just such a cool experience. So now it's fun to have that whole thing come full circle, and now to have you, John, speaking at Author Advantage Live is just such a treat. So guys, help join me in welcoming to the stage. Let's give some hearts. Let's wave around here. I want to join you. Help welcome me in joining to the stage, Mr. John Maxwell. John, so happy to have you here.
Oh, I'm delighted to be with you, Chandler. Thank you very, very much. And yeah, I remember that conference. I sure do. Jack Welch was a good friend.
Yeah.
And I learned a lot about leadership from him too. But yeah, it's great to be with you. And I'm very excited about what you're doing and helping, inspiring authors write books. And it's just a beautiful thing. So thanks for having me. And, it says it all when you said you've known me for ages. It just tells you how old I am. And by the way, I've written 83 books and that's not that impressive when you realize you to write 83 books, you just have to be old. I mean, just think about it. If you're old, you can do it. If you're young, you can't write 83 books. So, you gotta be old to do those kind of things.
But well, it's been fun. I think I'm probably one of many in the audience that have grown up with John C. Maxwell books all around the house. I mean, it's like a part of an upbringing and a part of an era, and it's in the churches, it's in the businesses, it's all over the place. So let's start there. So, I think you just mentioned 83 books published. I think it's easy for me or for anyone here in the audience to look at that and be intimidated, right? They see the John C. Maxwell of today with 83 books written, but you had to start with one book to get to 83 books. And so talk to me about that. What was the decision, or why write that very first book?
I love that question, Chandler. Let me start by saying my biggest regret of my stage in life where I am now is everybody sees the success. They see the 83 books. And I really wish people could have seen me when I started. I just really do. Because I wasn't very good, and I'm not being humble or modest. I just wasn't good, and it's okay. And I have a teaching that I love. I don't teach it a lot, but I have a teaching that's basically is entitled "You're Never Good the First Time." And I love it when people say, "Well, I'm really working hard. I really want to do this well," and it's their first time. I say, "Well, relax. It's not going to be that good. I mean, it's your first time." But I had a mentor. I had a mentor, Les Parrott was his name, and he had written 5 books. And we were having lunch one day, and I asked him, I said, "Les, why do you write books?" Because I had no desire to write books. I love books, love reading, no desire to write them. And I asked him, I said, "Why do you write books?" And I'll never forget, he looked at me and said, "John, I write books to extend my influence way beyond my personal touch."
Mm.
I leaned into that lunch table that day, Chandler, and I said, "I'm going to become an author." And honestly, I didn't become an author because I wanted to write books. I became an author because I wanted to influence people beyond my own personal touch. And so my first book was called Think on These Things. And it wasn't a good book. It's still in print. And I love it. The title of the book is Think on These Things. And there's really nothing I wrote that you need to think about. So it just cracks me up. It took me, for all your aspiring writers out there and authors, it took me a year to write the book. Mm-hmm. It's only 100 pages. So, just start doing the math. I only wrote a page every 3 days. Okay, so I'm averaging honestly about a paragraph a day. So when people say, it may take a while. Well, it took me a year to write a 100-page book. I would start a subject and for people to think on, and I ran out of gas. So all my chapters are short. Okay, so get the picture: 100 pages, and there are 33 chapters. 33 chapters. Okay, so don't miss this. 33 chapters. So I'm averaging 3 pages a chapter. And so, honestly, and the book's still in print. I have no idea. In fact, of the 83 books I wrote, I think 79 of them still are in print. I mean, it's ridiculous. But,
yeah.
but a lady came up to me the other day, and she had this book, Think on These Things. And she was so excited. She said, "Oh, I've got your first book, and I want you to sign it for me." And she said, "I just love this book." And I mean, she's telling me she loves this book. It's not any good. And so I asked her, I said, "Well, what do you love about the book?" I'm kind of flabbergasted. And I'll never forget it. She looked at me and she said, "Oh, the short chapters. I love the short chapters." She said, how did you think about these short chapters?" I said, "Lady, I didn't think about short chapters at all. It was my first book. I wrote about 3 pages and I ran out of gas. In fact, some of those chapters are 2 pages too long." I mean, and I'm just cracking up. So, and I say that because I never wanted to write 83 books. I just wanted to write one book.
Mm.
And the first book I wrote wasn't any good, and it took me a year to write it, and very few people bought it. And I wrote a second book, and it wasn't any good either. And then again, very few people bought it. And I went to people that could help me, a man named Les Stobie, who was a really good writer. And I asked Les, I said, "Les, I don't know how to write. I know how to speak. I know how to speak orally, but I don't know how, I'm not a good writer. And he was so kind to me. He was so patient. I mean, he did for me, I'm assuming, Chandler, a lot of what your company does for your writers. They help them. I didn't have you to go to when I started off. I didn't have anybody to go to. So I'm out there just doing my best. And my best isn't really that good. It took me 7 books before I got it. And I can still remember the eureka moment. I was in Houston doing a conference. And I was doing some writing in between. And I was in my hotel room. And all of a sudden, I was writing a book on your attitude, the difference maker. Mm-hmm. And I'm writing this book on attitude. And all of a sudden I'm writing and I'm saying, I just caught on how to write. Mm. And I called Les Stobie on the phone. He was in California. And I said, Les, let me read this to you. And I started reading him this page that I had just written. And he just got so happy for me. He said, you got it, John. You got it. You got it. And in fact, he said, you don't need me anymore. Now you understand how to write, which I did need him more. That there's no doubt about that. But the point that I want everybody to hear is that that I wasn't any good. And that's okay.
Yeah.
Because I really wanted to add value to people. And so I determined that I needed to get good. And let me just say this. Jim Dobson helped me a lot too. And that's an old name that most of your people won't realize, but he was a very successful author back there. And I remember taking him a book in my early days. In fact, the first one came off the press. I was going to Colorado Springs. So I had dinner with he and Shirley that night. And I gave him that book. And I said, it just came off the press, you know, today. And I brought it to you. I want you to have it. And he smiled and he looked at it and you know, he was approving, I mean, of my effort, obviously. And then he asked me a question. He said, is this your best book? I said, yeah, it is. I said, it's my best book. And then he said something that really marked me as an author. He said, good. Because always remember, John, you're only as good as your last book.
Mm.
That every day when I write, because I write every day, I remember I'm only as good as my last book. You can't, you know, people make a great mistake when they start to live off of their reputation.
Right.
You know, yesterday's success doesn't guarantee today's success. And the greatest detriment to tomorrow's success is my own success today. and so he just told me, he said, John, don't ever rely on your reputation to sell books. Mm. Because he said, when you write one that's not good, then the next time you have a book come out, the reader's going to ask, the question they're going to say is, I wonder if this one's good.
Yeah.
He said, whenever your readers are asking the question, I wonder if this is good, you've already failed them.
Mm.
He said, you write books in such a way that when they see your name on a book and they don't have it, they just pick it up. They don't even know what the subject was. They just picked up the book. And that was great mentorship that really helped me greatly in those early days. And I'm taking too long to answer your question.
Hey,
you're talking to an old man, and I got stories.
Follow up on that. How do you do that over 83 books? Because I think it can be easy. I mean, if you're only good as your last book and you've written 83 books, it's like, how do you keep the quality high while also writing quantity? You largely write on leadership. And I think some people that when they go deep on a topic, they would think, hey, I'm going to run out of things to say. Like, how do you continually write around a similar topic and keep the quality so high?
Well, Chandler, it's a great question. And honestly, when I wrote my first leadership book, I thought I would just write one leadership book. I didn't plan on this. But here's what happens. The answer to all, I want every author, every person that really wants to add value to people, I want you not to miss this. The secret sauce in writing or speaking or keeping relevant and staying on the edge is your own personal development and growth. That's the secret sauce. Mm. And I'm known for leadership, but what I'm really passionate about is personal growth and development. I'm 74 and I'm just growing crazy. I'm learning and growing and asking questions and I'm curious and I'm trying new things out. And so what I want you to understand is if somebody would just say, you know, at this age, how did you get there? I would look at them and with great integrity, I would say, I am passionate about my personal growth and development. And every day, I mean, every day, I'm learning, growing, filing, applying to my life. And so this is the key. So, because you think, well, I'm going to run out of gas here. If I write on leadership, I mean, how many books can you write on leadership? I thought I could write one. And then when I wrote one, I thought, well, I'm learning this about leadership. I need to write about this. Here's what I want you to know. If you're a growing person, the more you know, the more you know you don't know.
Mm, yeah.
And I am filled with what I don't know. I'm curious. I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, man, there are some things about leadership that are still out there, and I got to find them and I got to figure them out. And I got to be able to apply them and put them in the lives of my readers. And so I'm continually developing and growing myself. And so when people say, well, how do you get enough material for all those books? Well, it's out of my growth. I write out of my growth. I write out of my own personal development, my own personal experiences. And by the way, my greatest teaching, my greatest writing comes out of what I'm learning right now.
Mm. Yeah.
And so I meticulously file. I'm extremely disciplined not to lose all those golden nuggets that you would want to put somewhere in a book sometime. So I've developed an extensive filing system, and every day I file. In fact, my father, when I was 18, I felt called to go into ministry, and my father set me aside. My father was very successful, and he said, "John," he said, "let me tell you what's sad." He said, "What's sad is I listen to people that this was old for me when I was a kid, that are 65. And he said, they have nothing to say except old stories.
Mm.
He said, let me tell you something, son. Fill the well with water every day. Don't draw water out of the well without putting some water into it. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you, that's just stayed with me. And so I constantly am learning and growing. And so I just pass on to you what I'm learning, and to the readers, what I'm learning. And that's helped me to stay fresh.
Yeah.
I love what I do, and I do what I love, but I never depend on yesterday, to bail me out today at all. I mean, yesterday I had a sign for years in my office, Chandler, that just read very simply, "Yesterday ended last night." and I look at people all the time. I look at them and say, if you still are pleased and excited about what you did 5 years ago, can I tell you something? You're not a growing person.
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, I look back and I appreciate my past. But dear Lord, where I am and where I'm going is so much greater than what I've done.
Yeah.
And so, you look back and express gratitude to God and to people that helped you. But then, you turn right around, you get back in the game. The game's going on. You don't have time to kind of look back too much. You want to get back in the game.
How do you?
That personal growth has been huge.
I agree. I think it's easy to intellectually understand what your dad said to you as a kid. How do you live that out at 75? Where it's okay, I can get this, but still, have that hunger and that drive to personally grow, and therefore your impact continues to grow, and the books get better, and that sort of thing.
It's a great question. Great question. Well, I get up usually, not every morning, but I don't set alarms, but I usually get up around 5 in the morning. I'm a morning person. And I put on my robe and I start writing immediately. So an ideal day for me is from 5 to 11, maybe, mm-hmm. to write. Mm-hmm. But I write every day. I write every day. Now, I don't get all those kind of blocks. Sometimes I get maybe only 30 minutes to write. But I write every day. It may be only a paragraph. It may be just three or four thoughts of a book that I'm thinking about. Mm-hmm. But I write every day. I write every day. And so people look at me and they say, well, you're just incredibly self-disciplined. And I said, no, not really. I'm not. The reason I get up that early and start writing is there's one word that just fills me. And that word is anticipation.
Mm.
I get up and I put on the robe and I can hardly wait to start writing because I anticipate. I mean, and I write old school. I have a legal pad and a 4-color pen.
No way.
No. Everything I write is out by hand. I don't even have a computer. I have an iPad, but I don't even have a computer.
Yeah.
And I write, I write out physically the words on my 4-color pen. And the 4 colors mean different things when I'm writing. But the point being is I can hardly wait to get to my legal pad and my pen. Because I know I'm going to put something on paper that day that in a year or two or three or somewhere in the future, it's going to help somebody. Hmm. And anticipation is my motivation. In other words, once you begin to see lives change because of who you are and what you've done, let me tell you something. Yeah. Honest to God, I don't need you to motivate me. I don't need my team to motivate me. I don't need anybody to kind of pat me on the back and say, oh, come on, John, you can do it. I mean, I can hardly wait.
Yeah.
I mean, I can hardly wait to share with your aspiring writers on your show because I love what you're doing, Chandler. I can hardly wait to talk to them and just share with them out of my heart because I just know that there's going to be something I say to them that's going to make a difference in their life. It's going to mark them.
Yeah.
And so anticipate when I speak, I can hardly wait to speak. I'm in the green room and, you know, I mean, come on, I'm ready. Let's go. I've got something that's going to help people. It's going to make a difference in their lives.
Yeah.
And when you think about it, would you really want to read a book from somebody that didn't anticipate that they were going to help you?
Hmm.
I mean, do you think I want to hear somebody speak and they don't think that what they say is going to make a difference in my life? I don't think so.
Yeah.
So I'm filled with anticipation and I'm 74. And some people say, well, now when's this going to stop? Well, obviously I have a short span. But my father just died a year ago during COVID year. He didn't die of COVID, but on July 4th, a year ago, he passed away and he was 98.
Mm.
And literally when he was 94, Chandler, we're having lunch together. He's 94, still working full time. He's 94. And he's looking at me, he said, son, look at me. And I'm looking at him and he says, son, he said, I truly believe that my greatest days are still ahead of me.
Mm.
He's 94. I know people 24 that can't say that.
Yeah.
Anticipation.
Hmm.
And I think the moment you begin to catch that you're really making a difference in people's lives, I don't mean this unkindly. There's not a paycheck in the world. I can't be bought. Honestly, you can't lay something down and say, boy, John, I'll give this to you. Why would I want to quit? Why would I want to stop where I am? I mean, I'm in my compounding years now. Tyler Perry and I were having a conversation one day. And he was talking about building movie studios. Of course, he's an actor and a producer and director, et cetera. And so he built his first studio, outgrew it, built a second studio, outgrew it, built his third studio, outgrew it. So he said, okay, this is ridiculous. I'm going to build me a studio. I'll never outgrow. He built a big, big, big studio, and he outgrew it. And he said, John, I was so tired. I said to myself, I don't want to build another studio. I'm just going to, this is it. I'm done. I'm not building a bigger studio. And he said, for 2 years, I just held it. And then one day he realized, I'm not reaching my potential.
Mm.
There are people that I could be hiring if I had a bigger studio that need a job. And there are people that act. And he said, and so he went and he bought a whole bunch of land at Fort Smith and built this humongous studio. And while we're talking at the end, I looked at him and I said, Tyler, you know what you're saying to me? And this is true for everybody, I think. I said, when you can afford to quit, you can't afford to quit.
Mm.
Because you're in your compounding years. So I tell people if they're going to quit, quit the first year. Just quit. I mean, you only got 6 weeks after you started. Just quit. Just say, I quit. Because you haven't done anything. You haven't accomplished anything. You haven't helped anybody. They're not going to miss you. Quit. Just quit then. But when you really get good, everything compounds ridiculous. And I'm in a very compounding time in my life with my companies.
Yeah.
And when I write a book now, people buy books. I mean, they buy books and they buy a lot of books. And so what I'm saying is when you can afford to quit, you really can't afford to quit because that's in the compounding time. And I think people, when they quit at the top of their game, I think what they don't understand is that they left so much on the table that they'll never realize because they just, they just stopped short. So I don't even think.
Yeah.
There's a finish line. In fact, I'm going to write a book. I have a whole list of books, but I'm going to write a book entitled, Is There a Finish Line?
Mm.
And basically for some people there is because they have a self-imposed finish line and they cross it and they retire or whatever. And by the way, when you cross your finish line, guess what? You're finished. I mean, it's over. I mean, what part of finish do you not understand? And so I just think there's no finish line. I think I just keep, it's out there, but I'm not close to it yet. I'm not arrived yet. That's for sure.
Right. Well, and I agree with you that I think so many people, they either quit too soon or they switch too soon. And they might get 20 books into writing about leadership and say, all right, I've written everything I could on this topic. It's time to move on. Right. But to your point, the compound effect in those compound years are, yeah. I mean, are beyond that. And it's kind of like my team gets tired of me saying this, I think, but it's the windshield mentality, right? Dabo Sweeney, coach of Clemson Tigers, always talks about this. There's a reason that your windshield is this big and your rearview mirror is this big, right? And it's because it's always about what's next. And look yes, forward. We are meant to reflect on what's happened, but most importantly, look forward to what's next. And hopefully what's next, there is no finish line. John, I want to ask you one or two more questions about the writing piece, and then I'd love to talk about marketing and using books to grow your businesses and kind of how you've done that and all that stuff. On the writing, so I don't know if you know this, but I know a mutual friend of ours, Michael Hyatt, so he's a mentor of mine, and he's become kind of an official advisor for self-publishing school over the last year. And I was talking to him, and he said, John, he was kind of in prep for the conference, and he said, John, he's one of the most prolific writers I know, and he has a really unique process. And he's like, it's kind of similar to mine, but he's one of the only people that I've seen that's done it like this. So can you just talk about kind of like what is your writing process and how has that evolved over the course of the books that you've written?
Yeah, I sure can. Michael's, by the way, when you see him next time, he's a wonderful friend. I like Michael a lot. He helped me a lot.
Yeah.
He's been a real good friend and mentor of mine. So please tell him hi. Well, I'm very strategic. And it's one of my five strengths out of Strength Finders is, and so when I find that there's something that I want to accomplish, I want to get a system or I want to get a process to accomplish it. And I have what I call the five essentials of writing, and I call it the power of five things that I do. And these five things are very essential into writing. And I got the power of five from a teaching that was called the Rule of Five. And mm-hmm. you maybe have read mm-hmm. it or heard about it. But the Rule of Five is very simple. And that is, if you want to cut a tree down in your backyard, there are just five essentials that you've got to do to accomplish that. The first one is you have to know what you want to accomplish. And what I want to accomplish is I want to cut the tree down. Okay, that's simple. Number two is you have to have the right tool. Okay, so when I go in my backyard, I pick up an axe. Okay, I don't pick up a baseball bat. I can go to that tree and swing that baseball bat as hard as I swing my axe, but it ain't going to happen with the baseball. It's not how hard I work. It's not the effort I put into it. I just didn't have the right tool. So I know what I want to accomplish. I have the right tool. And then you have to take action. That axe, you got to go over there and you got to, you got to swing at that tree. You got to take action. Good intentions never build anything. And so you have to have action to that in that process. And the fourth thing is you have to stay focused. What's my goal? To cut down the tree. Well, what happens if I go out and I look and say, well, there's another tree I need to cut down over there. So, it goes back to when you talked about quitting or switching. Well, I need to go. So now I'm chopping at that tree. Now I'm chopping at another tree. Now, after a while, I'm not cutting the tree down. I've just got a bunch of scarred trees in my backyard because I haven't stayed focused with what I'm trying to accomplish. And then the last essential is, every day I do this. Every day. So and so the fifth thing is consistency. You not only have to stay focused, but you have to be consistent.
Mm.
And so the rule of five basically says you got to know what you want to accomplish. You got to have the right tool. You got to take action. Got to stay focused. You got to be consistent. So I developed a rule of five, or what I call now the power of five. I like the word power much better than rule.
Mm-hmm.
The power of five, because there's really good return here of writing. What are the five essentials that I have in writing? Every day I read, and I don't know, but I would average 2 hours a day reading probably. But every day I think of what I'm reading, and I when I say I'm thinking, I'm applying that. Okay, where's that going to work in my life? And so I'm spending a lot of time. Where can I apply this? Is there a place where would this be a good thought for a book later on when I'm, make a book that I'm not writing? But every day I read, every day I think. And by the way, when I read a book, I mark it. The first time I mark the book, and then the second time I read it again. Mm. But all I read the second time are my markings.
Nice.
And so the first time I mark the book, the second time the book marks me. And I pull it out. And so when I read a book, I pull everything out of that book that I can apply to my life, that I can apply to who I am and to what I'm doing, what I'm writing. So every day I read, every day I think, every day I file. Every day I file. I have filed every day since I was 17. I've never missed a day of my life of filing.
Wow.
I have filed. I have tens of thousands of thoughts, ideas, and quotes. So people ask me all the time, John, where do you get all your material? Well, I've been filing. See, there are two kinds of writers. There's a person who says, here's a subject I'd like to write on, so now I got to go find material for it. I'm not that writer. Mm-hmm. I'm a writer who says, here's material, file it now. Mm-hmm. And there'll be a day I'll write a book, and then I just go to my material. It's already been found. I don't wait till I know what I want to do to find it. I find it, and I may someday it may be what I want to do. Mm. And it's just a whole different mindset and different approach to this whole area of filing. But every day I read, every day I think, every day I file. And every day I ask questions. I wrote a book called Good Leaders Ask Great Questions.
That's a great book.
Yeah, and that book's gone crazy. That was a surprise. What's funny is I can never pick the book.
Yeah.
I mean, I wrote a book about 6 years ago that I thought was going to be a huge bestseller called Sometimes You Win, Sometimes You Learn. Mm-hmm. And I loved writing that book. And I thought, this is going to go crazy. And it's gone. All my books sell very well. So, I mean, it's done well, but it didn't go crazy. Well, when I wrote the book, you know, Good Leaders Ask Great Questions, I thought, okay, this has got a small niche and, it'll find its place. And it's gone crazy. It's just gone crazy. Yeah. Because most people, leadership, they don't think about asking questions. Yeah. But I am always asking questions. If I have any kind of a time with you, Chandler, I would very quickly be asking you questions. Because the only learning I can do is by asking questions. Mm. I can't learn by telling you what I know.
Yeah.
And so I have on my iPhone probably 60 questions.
Yeah.
They're just great questions to ask. When I'm getting ready to go out to lunch with somebody, I'll look at those questions real quick and say, here are three questions I want to ask them. So I'm very curious. I have a passion to learn.
Yeah.
And so every day I ask questions. And what's powerful about that is it's in the asking questions that I do. My greatest material finder is in asking questions.
Yeah.
And by the way, when you ask questions, you direct the conversation.
Right.
Because I'm asking you a question. When I ask you a question, if I ask you a question, Chandler, about, tell me about your writing, book writing business and how you're helping authors. Yeah. Well, immediately you start, I'm learning from you. I'm learning from you. And so, but I'm also directing how I want the conversation to go. So every day I read, file, read, think, file, ask questions. And then number five, every day I write. Hmm. Every day I write.
Got it.
And people say, well, what do you mean you write every day? What I mean is I write every day. I don't know what's so complicated about it. I just write. You know what? I have people all the time that come to me. I hear this all the time. They come up to me and they say, oh, my gosh, I've been wanting to meet you. I want to write a book. Just help me out. I really have this book I want to write. What do you suggest? And I said, well, that's very simple. Start writing. And they look at me, and it's like I spoke Greek to them. and what I mean by start, and I know what they're thinking. They haven't started writing because they don't know how the book's going to turn out. They haven't thought everything. See, here's what they think. I'm not going to do anything until I figure it out. Yeah. Well, then they're never going to do anything.
Yeah.
You do something to figure it out. You don't figure it out to do something. It's a total different reverse there. Mm. And so once you start moving, that's when inspiration comes. That's when enlightenment comes. It's called, I have a whole lecture called Advanced Attraction. And basically the whole thesis of the lecture is that you, when you start moving, you start attracting,
right.
But you don't attract sitting on your butt, you know, we're supposed to leave footprints in the sands of time, not butt prints in the sands of time, you know? So So it's the moving, it's the going forward that makes it happen. So yeah. I do those five things consistently.
Yeah.
And it's just my five essentials, and they're every day, and it works. And I have enough material to write 20 more books, no doubt. I mean, I wouldn't have to leave my office and I could write 20 more books.
That's crazy.
So my question is not what shall I write next, or what can I write something next, but which subject do I want to
That's great. And guys, if Good Leaders Ask Great Questions is a great book. And it's also an interesting, if anyone wants to study this, I think it's an interesting way of the way that you formatted the writing of that book. I would guess that it was one of your easier books to write. Because I just thought it was really strategic in how you formatted it with the questions and all that. So that's kind of an interesting aside for folks. Follow up on this, John, you said that you never know which one's going to sell. So looking back, and so we're going to switch gears a little bit to selling books, using books to grow your business, that sort of thing. What's your top one or top three books, selling books of all time? And if you were to look back, why do you think those books have sold better than all the rest of them?
Well, it's a great question. I have about 50 of my books. I think it's 49. Mm-hmm. I think 49 of my books have sold 100,000 copies or more. Mm-hmm. About 30 of those books have sold 500,000 copies or more.
It's crazy.
And then I think I'm now at number 11 as far as million sellers.
Okay.
11. If you took the 11 books that have sold a million, at least a million, the number one book is the 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership.
Another good one. Yeah.
It's the best. Now, that's actual book sales. In China alone, because I've done a lot of work in China, they've sold at least 10 million of those books in China alone.
Wow.
And those aren't even counted in my 33, 34 million, whatever it is. Those aren't even because those are all under, they're illegal.
Yeah.
I got paid for 50,000 copies and, mm-hmm. they've sold 10 million, but I don't count that at all because I have a strong black market for my books.
Everywhere.
In fact, when I travel, especially in Eastern Europe, when I travel, I sign books that my translator will tell me what they are, but they're 90% of the books I sign in Eastern Europe are black market books.
Like copies.
Of course, of which I don't really care. I mean, that's not a very good attitude I have, but my goal is to influence people. So they're helping me get out the word. So, it works out well. But 21 Laws of Leadership, by the way, that's the best-selling leadership book ever written. My second book would be Developing the Leader Within You 2.0 or Developing the Leader Within You. Mm-hmm. That was the first book that basically said people could learn how to lead. Mm-hmm. Up until that time, they kind of thought leadership was a little mystical and you were kind of a born leader.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was kind of a breakthrough book then. And then my third book, in my top 10 would be my Leadership Bible.
Yep.
Which has sold over a million copies. It would be, How Successful People Think. That's a ridiculous seller.
That's got to be one of your best. I mean, this is such a great title.
Yeah, my backlist, which are books that have been published and no longer are marketed at all, my backlist sells about 1.2 million a year. That's just my backlist.
That's awesome.
I mean, that's just cream for the publisher. I mean, good Lord.
Yes. That's the dream.
I mean, they're not doing one thing except clipping coupons. See, if I'd have known you earlier, I would have been clipping those coupons myself. You know what I mean? I wouldn't be a poor man. I would be much better off. But say, you didn't have your company back then. It's your fault. Why didn't you could have helped me out. But of the top 10, eight of those books would be leadership books.
And what's the, when you look back, is there anything that those have in common, or is there anything that you say, I guess that's probably why those sold the best? Why do you think those have been the ones that have sold the most?
Well, I think that the leadership books sold because that's what I'm known for.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that when it fits into the branding of the person or what they're known for, it's kind of like, if it's a leadership book, The CEO of Random House told me that I have written more leadership material than any person's ever lived in the history of the world. And again, I didn't try to do that either.
You know
what I mean? And that can't happen unless you're old either. It's like the 83 books. But the point being, I think when it fits into what people know me for, and which I'm really known for the leadership realm, I think those books just do better. Just because. And what's interesting is my publisher, when I started off, they told me I shouldn't write leadership books because it was too small of a market.
Interesting.
I mean, they said you need to go to something that appeals to a lot more people than leadership. Yeah. I said, well, I'm trying to influence leaders. So they told me two things that wouldn't work, 33, 34 million books later. And one is they said, don't write leadership. It's too narrow a field. And the second thing they told me was don't have lists in your book. You read in my books, I've got lists on every page of something.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And they said that, people don't want. I said, well, I like lists. So, you know what I mean? I make a list for my list. So
make a list. Just
but I think that those books did well because it kind of fit who I was. I think today now I write leadership books, but I write a lot of other books. I just wrote a book called Change Your World. And that book was just released at the end of January. And that's already sold over 250,000 copies.
Wow.
That book's going crazy. That's going to be the best. That will be end up probably being the best selling book, and by far in a year's time, it'll be the best selling book I've ever written.
Why do you think so?
Why do I think so?
I think it's
because of two things. One is I have a coaching company, and they're called the John Maxwell Team. We're the largest coaching company in the world.
Yeah.
We're only 10 years old, but we have, almost 40,000 coaches in 162 countries of the world.
We've learned a lot from you guys, by the way. I mean, it's so impressive what you've built. We've learned a lot from you guys and thinking through how do you structure the company? Like, how do you bring in coaches? Yeah. How do you develop people? Like, it's been really cool to see, and we've learned a lot.
Yeah. And those people are legs to my legacy. Yeah. And so they're always out there doing masterminds and learning lunches and things. And so they're using the books. So I have a vehicle to get the book out. And Change Your World is what we do in countries in transformation. I mean, we literally go into countries invited by the president of the countries to do values transformation. So we've been doing that for 10 years. And so it's got a movement behind it. So when I wrote Change Your World, I've got thousands of coaches and facilitators that are just taking that book and, just pass out. So I think it's because it's where my heart is and kind of what I'm known for right now in transformation. In fact, the king of Saudi Arabia asked me to come over, and I went over and spent some time with them on helping Saudi Arabia do transformation. And so we're getting really well known for that. Yeah. And so Change Your World kind of fits that. And so it's going crazy, but I have organizations behind it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that helps. That helps a lot, as far as the book sales.
For
helps
sure.
A lot.
Have all your books been traditionally published?
Have they all been what?
Traditionally published?
No, I did the Power of Five book, which was just self-published.
Okay.
We got permission from our publisher to do it. I don't know, Chad, have there been any others? Most of mine have been published through, Hachette, HarperCollins, Thomas Nelson, Time Warner back then.
Yeah.
And, so We've used mainly publishing companies. Yeah.
What was the thought process behind that? It sounds like there's one that was self-published. What was the thought process behind self-publishing that? And then what's been the thought process? I mean, obviously you can move books at this point, or not even at this point, for a long time now. What's been your thought process behind continually going with big publishers? I'm assuming probably significant advances on every book.
Well, they give me $10 or $20. For many, many years, it was just really, I didn't want to do the work. I just wanted somebody else to do the work. I wanted to write the manuscript and then said, here, go after it. And so that worked out really well. When I self-published the one, it was a network marketing book, and I knew that we could really move it through channels. And so we got permission from them to do that one.
Yeah.
And it did well and it's doing well. But we do the publishing through companies because they just do a bulk of the work. I mean, again, I didn't know you. I mean, If I'd have known you, I'd have sat down and probably had you help me out a little bit. Publishers have great strengths, but they also have really great weaknesses. I mean, publishers very seldom sell books. I mean, you know, they're a publishing company. They publish books. They don't really sell them. And so we look back and forth all the time at the pro con of what we should do as far as the future. I got a lot more books in me, so.
All right.
Who knows? I may call you.
Well, hey, I'm happy to sit down with the team and talk pros, cons, or we're always happy to help in the future if that's ever helpful. I want to talk about your marketing, you know, how you market books and how that's changed over the course of the books that you've published. And funny story, person who will not be named, I think you'll know who I'm talking about, but I will not name this person. So I have a friend, it's a mutual friend who I'm pretty sure used to represent you in your books. And I remember, it's just funny because I got this person, I got the story from this person, and then I told it to Michael Hyatt. And he's like, yeah, that's true. But he's like, you know, he was like, it was my job to basically go in and into Thomas Nelson and negotiate as much of the budget as possible for them to give to us, because we knew that we could spend it more effectively than they could. And Michael Hyatt, he's like, yeah, you know, that's kind of is every book. It's like, all right, we're negotiating this and then we're using it. And so obviously you guys had a process of like, okay, we feel like we can market this book effectively and probably more effectively than the publisher. But what did that look like for you? What does your marketing process look like for books as a whole, and how has that evolved over the course of multiple books?
Well, you know, you're asking the wrong person.
Yeah.
Because I don't really get involved very much in the marketing at all. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I can give you a few general principles.
Yeah.
Chad, who's with me in the studio, do you want to help me out on that one, Chad? If you want to, you can talk to him a little bit about how we market. But I write the book. Obviously, I'm a chief marketer myself. Mm-hmm. Because I speak to 1 million people a year. My gosh. So I can talk to him about a book I'm writing. Come on up here, Chad. Come on up here beside me. He's in the studio with me today. And so I move a lot of books just because of my own persona and who I am and what I do and the speaking. So, but we do it through other ways. Chad, jump in there and just give him a couple of thoughts.
Yeah, so I've been with John for 19 years. Chandler, good to see you today, my friend. It's good to get to know you a little bit too, man, over the time. But been serving actually in the last couple of years, specifically with our direct consumer side of the business, our solutions group. So really working hand in hand with John and the publishers on how to launch John's books effectively. And so it is a combination of several different things. I mean, John's at a unique stage in his life where we can have a significant distribution channels through our coaches, as John mentioned. First, what we always start with is we get a team together to really brainstorm on how we can do this effectively. And that is an important piece. Surrounding yourself with people, maybe it's even just a couple if you're just starting, that believe in you, believe in your vision, your mission, that can help you be a thinking partner in this space is huge, because John has always done that. I mean, his inner circle, you look at who's around John, they've been there for 20, 30 plus years. He's kept a consistent group. Everybody that's even helped him in the writing process is there for him. But bringing that group in to collaborate, to brainstorm, John, you're even a part of those, even sometimes with the publishers. I mean, you sit in those, you've always been intentional, even at this stage, to sit in with the publishers before we launch to really cast the vision behind why this book is so significant too.
And we work real hard on negotiating who gets the money. Mm. You know, do they get the money to market my books, or do I get the money to market my books? And we've gone. There are times when we say, okay, we'll take your plan this time, and there are a lot of times we say no. We think we have a better plan, and so we've gone back and forth on that.
Yeah, and I think that was the funny story that I was hearing. It was just like, hey, it was my job to make sure that they give as much money to us as possible, because we know we can spend it well. So who's spending that money? It's someone on your team, John? It's you, Chad? It's someone else?
Yeah, Chad spends everything.
I just float it back out.
I bring it in. Chad spends it. I'm done.
We do. Well, I mean, we do. We take the advance, and we'll use that and even get the funding from the publisher to use it for a lot we're doing with social, whether it's graphics, whether it's video. I mean, you guys know in this world, in this stage we're in, I mean, a video editor is more important than anything right now to edit video and content to produce and launch, as well as graphic design. And so we'll spend it on that with some, whether it's in-house we do it, whether we outsource through a third party. We still kind of, that's a big piece of what we do, is the social aspect of a book launch. That's important for us. Well, also we'll spend it on creating a book launch team.
Yeah.
That's a huge piece with that is find your launch team that are going to be the people that are going to help get behind the book. They're going to put the reviews on Amazon. They're going to make the comments. They're going to be a part of your tribe to really get, as John mentioned, the legacy for you that may just be starting with your first book. You know, find that team that's going to be core. And John, you've done a lot of book clubs, more in the last 2 years than you have done that's previously.
Yeah, I enjoy
that. You've kind of adjusted to the new norm of launching books in that sense too. And so, but yeah, we do spend a bunch on the marketing side, more graphically, video editing and content, landing pages, sales pages, find a good learning management software that you can add in a digital course add on or something of that nature that can be a bonus feature, or maybe it's a Zoom webinar with you that they get access to by pre-ordering the book. There's a lot of creative ways you can go for pre-orders to drive those pre-orders. And we start that process too, Chandler, and those tuning in. We start that process really, and we sit down 8 months out before the book launches, but 6 months out is where we're really ramping up, and we want to get those pre-orders going, you know, at least 4 or 5 months before the launch.
Yeah, that's smart. That makes a lot of sense. And so, I love the book club piece because it's something we talk about all the time. It's like, how do you build virality into your book and into your launch? And so that you make where one book becomes 5 books sold or one book becomes 30 books sold. And I mean, I think a book club is one of the best ways to do that because you have one book. If you're doing localized book clubs, I feel like this is something Dave Ramsey's done so well as well as not even just on the book side of things, but it's the bulk sales. It's you're selling into a church and then there's 300 licenses, or you're selling into a school, or you're selling into organizations. I feel like you guys have done this really well, but kind of the all right, we've got one book club leader, which means 30 books sold. And so just like building in that virality, I think that's super smart. We're kind of in the home stretch here. So a couple final questions. John, for you, chicken or the egg, coaching business, speaking business, book, what, you know, I know you have some books at the start, like at what point did the coaching business come in? At what point did the speaking business come in and kind of, you know, share a focus, and how has that evolved over the years?
Well, Chandler, for me, speaking started. I started as a speaker. In fact, I start off as a pastor. Okay. Yeah. So I was doing a lot of speaking. And that caught on. I was a pretty decent communicator, and so people wanted to have me. What was interesting is by about 1993, my publishers were telling me that my books were being bought by the business community more than the Christian community. And I felt really kind of called to cross over to that. And so I made a big change in the mid-90s, and I crossed over. But speaking was always first. I started writing because of Les Parrott saying that speaking back then, now social media would be true, but speaking back then is if you were a person, basically they heard you. And so the writing was just a natural follow for that. For the coaching, for 20 years, I had people say, why don't you start a coaching company? Because I'd like to be a John Maxwell coach. And I just didn't do it. I didn't need to do it, and I just didn't feel compelled or called to do it until about 10 years ago, when I began to realize that there was a major group of people who just said, "If you'll just start a coaching, we want to be a John Maxwell certified coach."
Yeah.
And so when we started it, we had 1,000 people, I mean, almost like the day one join and start taking off with it. And that's been, it's interesting. That's probably been the most fulfilling thing I've done is because I'm watching these coaches really be very successful.
Yeah.
We have coaches making 7 figures today. I mean, they're just doing really, really well because we teach them. We have a leadership lane, entrepreneurship lane, you know, a marketing lane, a sales lane. I mean, we got all these lanes for them to be entrepreneurs and do well. And to watch them do well is really rewarding to me. You know, when I said I would give them my name, I had a little bit of question about what happens if they screw it up, you know, because I worked hard on building that name, but they police themselves, they police each other. And it's been a very fulfilling part of my life. So Mine was that way, speaking, yeah, writing, coaching. Yeah. But it wasn't because I planned that. It was just because that's how it naturally fell.
Yeah. So you've got, how do you see that ecosystem? Like, how do the books, how do you see the books growing, the speaking and the coaching, and the coaching and speaking selling more books? Like, what is,
well,
what is
that? In fact, it's an upward spiral all the time. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The books feed the coaches. I mean, many of my speaking today is for coaches and their companies and their referrals, and it just spirals up. I mean, the sale of the books today is just an asset, is having all these coaches doing these book clubs, learning lunches, masterminds. And so they're out there. So when I have a book come out, they're ready to run with that book because it gives them another mastermind to do with people. And so there's an immediate market for us. That makes sense.
So that's almost like a distribution channel in a way.
Yes.
Totally. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Totally. Yeah. Man. In fact, many of the companies I have started, I really started them because I had found a need and I had started fulfilling that need, and I needed a company to really meet that need, because I needed structure, I needed systems, I needed manpower. And so literally I kind of start companies because I got another thing going. So, I didn't even start them as a business person. I started them because I created a need, and then I had to have somebody fulfill that need. And I didn't want to stay there. I wanted to go create something. I really love the creating side of work.
Yeah. That's awesome. And I think there's a couple of lessons in there for people of knowing what you love, which is the creation piece, and then surrounding yourself with amazing people like Chad and an amazing team that accelerate that. And so, and then I love using the creation of books, almost like creating different business arms over the years, which is
no question.
Cool. Yeah.
No question.
Well, John, this has been so great. Kind of a parting question for you, I guess, two-parter, but first one being, knowing what you know now, what would be your advice to the John of 83 books ago, and all the other Johns here that are either, you know, maybe they're on their journey to writing their first book, or maybe they just finished and they're starting to kind of market and publish their first book? Knowing what you know now, what would your advice be?
Well, Les Parrott gave me the advice when we had that book conversation that day at lunch. He said, John, I don't write books to make money. I write books to add value to people. And so that's why I write books. I've made a lot of money. Okay. But I've never written a book to make money. I've written a book to add value to people. And I think that's what has kept me fresh. And I think that's what kept me authentic and real. And I think people can tell when you're using them. And I just value people. And I write a book with anticipation because I think it's going to help him. So I would tell the John Maxwell, the starting writing is add value to people. Just write to help people and add value to people. And then the second thing we already talked about, Chandler, and that is you've got to keep personally growing. Okay? I can promise you, I can spot a non-growing person very quickly in my life. And they're living off of yesterday. And so I just have a passion to keep learning and growing and asking questions. And that, don't ever worry about, will I have enough material to write a book? Worry about, will I grow enough to have material? There's a world of difference between those two. And I've always grown enough to have material, you know, and then the material is the byproduct for the book. Does that make sense?
It makes great sense. That's so great.
But let me just say this. If you do it for money, if I would have done it for money, I would have stopped a long time ago. I already have money. You follow me?
Yes, sir.
But that has no interest at all to me. I do it to add value to people. And I'm adding more value, better value today than I ever have before. And so that's where the fire is inside of me. The passion to do what I do is the fact I see lives changing every day of my life. And so my question is, why would I leave that?
Yeah.
You know, why would I go do something else? I can't even imagine that.
Yeah.
So just do it. If you do things for the right reasons, I think you have continuity and consistency. Mm-hmm. And I think when you do things for the wrong reasons, the wrong reasons take you the wrong way. It's just a matter of time.
Yeah, I agree. And you're speaking to two things we talk about all the time, which is books change lives. They change the life of the author and they change the life of the reader, totally, right? But then also this concept of leveraged impact, which I think is so cool that you spoke to this at the beginning of this, which is the ability to do work once and then that thing lives forever. You've created a book that long after you're off this earth is still going to be here making an impact. And that one woman that came up to you recently at that talk that said, "I love your first book." I feel like that's just such a great representation of leveraged impact from 30, 40 years ago, you taken the time to write that first book.
This will help your writers, if I can use a biblical term here. My books are the John the Baptist of my life. Mm-hmm. And what that means is my books go out before me. Yeah. And when we were in the Dominican Republic 2 weeks ago, and I went to the White House to meet with the president for an hour about doing transformation in his country, I didn't know him at all. But when he walked into the office, he shook my hand, a big smile, and he said, "I'm a fan. Mm-hmm. I have at least 15 of your books." You see, the books went before me. The books went before me. I didn't need to introduce myself. They already knew me. They'd already been walking with me. And I think that's one of the big advantages of writing is they really do. They go before you. They go behind you. They go around you. They just go where you're not there. And you're going to be continually surprised about the people that have been influenced by them that I would have had no idea.
Yeah.
But they got there before I got there.
Yeah, that's great. Well, John, this has been amazing. And Chad, guys, give some love to John and Chad. Chad's the reason that this happened. and him and I have conversations over the last couple of months. And I mean, John, it was by popular demand. I know that our people, they love your books. They read your books. And so we're just so glad that you're here. Kind of as we close here, John, where can people, like, what would be the one book that you're excited about right now that you think would be most helpful for this audience? And where can they go to get it? And where can they find out more about you and all the stuff that you know?
Change Your World. Change Your World is the newest book. And that's always my favorite book is always my newest book. And Chad, how do they get Change Your World?
Just changeyourworld.com. Simple. Just go to changeyourworld.com and you can pick up the book there. There's actually an assessment where you can actually define your values because that's the message behind the book. What are your values?
Yeah.
So there's a free assessment there. You can buy the book there. And then you can actually join one of our roundtables. It's a 6-week free roundtable access that you'll go through the values. And it's an incredible process too. So that's where you would go.
Awesome. changeyourworld.com. I'll speak for myself personally. My two favorites are 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership and Good Leaders Ask Great Questions. So there's two great books on the leadership side if you're leading a company or leading a team and looking to grow there. John, Chad, thank you guys so much. All right. Wow. What an interview, huh? John is just such a likable guy and just an amazing speaker. I don't know about you, but it's speaker goals and it's author goals for me personally. So I hope that you enjoyed this interview and I hope that you enjoyed this sneak peek into Author Advantage Live. Once again, if you want to get a ticket for this year, we'd love for you to join us. So if you're someone who's looking to sell more books, to build your author career, or to unlock what we call the Author Advantage, you're not going to want to miss Author Advantage Live this year. You can grab tickets. They just went on sale this week and they're at a crazy discount for early bird. So depending on when you're seeing this or listening to this, you're going to want to grab a ticket right now before the event happens. Or if you're seeing this after the event, you're going to want to grab a ticket for next year. All right. So go to authoradvantagelive.com. Grab a ticket today. Once again, that's authoradvantagelive.com. Grab a ticket and I can't wait to see you there. See you at Author Advantage Live. Thank you so much for watching or listening to this episode of the Self-Publishing School Podcast. I know there's so many places that you could be spending your time. There's other podcasts that you could be listening to, YouTube channels that you could be watching. So thank you so much. It means the world. Now, I want you to do three things right now if you found this episode helpful. All right, number one, I don't know if you know this, but we've got a YouTube channel. It's a companion channel to this podcast. All the video versions of the episode are on the YouTube channel. So number one, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Number two, if you're listening to this podcast wherever, whether this is Spotify, Apple Podcasts, number two, I want you to subscribe to this podcast right now so you don't miss a future episode. And then number three, this is probably the most important
leave a review on the podcast. All right. Reviews are super important and help the podcast get discovered by other people. So number three, leave a review on the podcast. Thank you so much. I'll see you in the next episode. If you're on the fence about scheduling a publishing consultation call with my team, maybe you're not quite ready for that, I've got some free training that I think will be really helpful for you. All right, all you have to do is go to register to sign up. Go to selfpublishing.com/free training. When you do, you're also going to get a free digital copy of my new book, Published. And on that training, you're going to learn the next step, so how to implement with your book. So how to write, how to publish, how to launch successfully. So go to register right now at selfpublishing.com/free training. I'll see you there.